Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And again today, our hearts go out to the loved ones of Tyler Clementi, the 18-year-old Rutgers freshman who jumped off the George Washington Bridge after his roommate surreptitiously live-streamed video on the internet of Tyler having sex with another man. And we open the phones right at the top today for anyone from the Rutgers community in particular, students, faculty, staff, anyone who wants to talk about Tyler or the incident or what this means for your school. The vigil last night was silent. You don't have to be silent this morning. You can call in and talk publicly about what you think this says about life at Rutgers, life in any freshman dorm. Freshmen from anywhere also welcome to call in. But if you are in any way associated with Rutgers, call in and talk about how you are feeling today and what this means for your school and what you think the larger lessons for the larger world should be. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, of course, you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. This raises so many issues, from cyberbullying to gay bashing to the proper punishment for the roommate and his accomplice, to the question of whether homosexuality denouncing pastors share some of the blame, as activist Dan Savage is quoted saying in the Times today, to whether the suicide can easily be blamed on the video at all. But let's begin with a simple bit of encouragement for any of you who may be in a position similar to Tyler Clementi's. Writer and activist Dan Savage is making a series of videos for young gays and lesbians facing adversity. He was doing this even before this incident. The series is called It Gets Better, aimed at young gays and lesbians facing adversity early in their lives. That's why the series is called It Gets Better. Here's a sample clip.
And I didn't even know anyone who was gay.
During middle school and high school, I was beaten up and harassed repeatedly.
At times I felt I was the only gay kid on earth.
I was kicked out by my Mormon family and was homeless.
I grew up in the suburbs in Orange County, and I didn't know that there was another gay person in the world. I thought I was the only one.
I was outed a lot at high school, even though I wasn't personally totally ready to admit it.
I couldn't imagine a future where I would meet the man of my dreams and live happily ever after.
It was hard, but we made it, and so will you.
So that's one example of Dan Savage's It Gets Better series. Here's one that's not just uplifting. Chris Crocker became famous on the internet when he cried over Britney Spears. And in this clip, he says he could have been a suicide statistic if he didn't have support in his life as a young gay man. He talks a little bit about the hate that he's received on his Facebook page, and he offers some encouragement.
I know it's hard. I know a lot of you don't have families that support you. But if you just accept yourself.
The moment you decide to believe in yourself and listen to your own voice in your own head, there's no getting to you.
Once you accept yourself, it makes the world of difference when you're met with rejection by these idiots.
Christine in Highland Park, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, Christine. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm a graduate student in sociology here at Rutgers, and I just wanted to mention some of the things that we've been organizing on campus in response to Tyler's suicide.
Thank you.
One thing is that a bunch of graduate students have come together to organize an event next Monday, the 11th, called Come Out, Speak Out. And we're going to have a bunch of speakers and people just talking either personally or academically, intellectually, about how we need to change the climate and really start talking about homophobia explicitly and talking about cyberbullying and really create a safe space on campus so that any student, whether LGBT or an ally or otherwise, feels like this is something that we can talk about and that we need to talk about on campus.
Thank you very much for calling in and starting us off. Are you surprised that this took place at Rutgers at all? Usually these incidents are in places that are more rural, more in parts of the country where gay people are extremely isolated. It's not supposed to be that bad in New Brunswick or Piscataway, New Jersey.
Right, I know, and I think Rutgers prides itself on having a really diverse community. And I know that the LGBT community on campus has some history. This is only my second year at Rutgers, so I can't speak to, you know, historically over time the last few years, mm-hmm. but I was very shocked. I mean, I thought that we had a community that was much more tolerant and accepting and that wouldn't tolerate any that kind of hatred towards other people. So I think it's a big wake-up call, not just at Rutgers, but universities across the country that, you know, unfortunately, it had to come to such a tragic conclusion. But, you know, would we have known that this was going on, that the video posts were going on, had it not reached such a tragic end? And I think that it's a real wake-up call for all of us to think about what is happening that we don't know about, and that if this incident reached the extreme, you know, with Tyler taking his own life, you know, how many students live their lives day-to-day afraid and feeling like they don't have anyone to talk to? So I think we need to do a lot more, not just at Rutgers, but in universities across the country.
Christine, thanks again for calling. We really appreciate it. With us now, Star Ledger reporter Amy Ellis Nutt, who's covering Rutgers after this incident. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
And Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate, who has a post called, "We Don't Know Why Tyler Clementi Killed Himself." Hi, Emily.
Hello.
Emily, why did you write a piece called "We Don't Know Why Tyler Clementi Killed Himself"?
Well, it's not obviously a popular view right now, and I, you know, share the sense of deep distress over Tyler Clementi's death, and I think that the way in which it's being used as a wake-up call can be very useful. But I do worry at these moments that we are very quick to jump to conclusions, and, you know, in this case, it seems like there's this before and after. We know that these this video streaming took place and that Tyler was thinking about it. But the posts that he was writing himself in the days leading up to his death don't demonstrate a huge amount of distress about this video streaming. And so it just made me wonder whether there's a more complicated story and something else going on. It may be that we'll find out that, you know, he was really taunted during that day because of the streaming and that he became really despairing by the day's end. But I just think all the facts are not in about what actually happened.
Tell us about those posts.
He was writing on a site called justusboys.com, and he was asking for advice about video spying. That was what he called the post. And, you know, he was describing what had happened to him, but at first seemed reluctant to overreact, I think. He said, you know, hey, is this really so bad? And then people started writing back to him to say, hey, you know, this is really not okay. What happened to you? And in his last post, he said, you know, I went to talk to my RA, my resident advisor, and he seemed to take it pretty seriously. And there's this sense of thinking about the future and of kind of absorbing what had happened to him. He uses the word unsettling at one point. But he doesn't seem in deep despair. And obviously there's something almost too confounding about this, because we know that by the end of the day, he was really despairing. But it just makes me wonder what happened in between and what was really on his mind.
Amy Ellis Nutt from the Star Ledger. Let's talk about the law governing this. There's a debate breaking out, I gather, whether the roommate and his accomplice should be charged with more than violating Tyler Clementi's privacy with this live video stream of him having sex. It's kind of a peeping Tom statute, which is what's being considered by prosecutors so far. Are you covering this aspect of the case?
The Star Ledger is. I'm not in particular, but there have certainly been, we've heard from a lot of readers who have contacted us and about the possibility of hate crime charges. As of now, they've only been charged with invasion of privacy. But I don't think the prosecutor has announced any additional charges yet, but they are being considered.
From what I understand, invasion of privacy could carry up to 5 years in prison. If a hate crime charge gets layered over that, it could double the maximum penalty. Some people are even calling for manslaughter charges, some kind of involuntary manslaughter, because of the outcome. Emily, do you have an opinion about that? Are you reluctant to tie a case of cyberbullying or to charge somebody, even if they're guilty of cyberbullying of some kind, with anything that's based on the outcome, the fact that somebody, you know, maybe this was the last straw for Tyler Clementi and he was psychologically unstable or depressed or suicidal anyway, and this was the last straw and this pushed him over the edge, this kind of thing. And as you know, there have been other cases like this around the country where there seemed to be a close connection in time between a case of anti-gay cyberbullying and the suicide of a teenager. What law do you think can be brought to bear? You cover the law.
Right. Well, I think the invasion of privacy charges in this case, while they're not a perfect fit, they do have to do with the actual conduct that Tyler's roommate and this other girl, you know, allegedly did. In other words, they have to do with the video streaming. The manslaughter charge has to do with Tyler's death, and that seems to me much more fraught, a much trickier way to go, because the prosecutors would have to show that Tyler's roommate could foresee the consequences of his actions. And that just seems to me so tough in this case. I mean, do we really want to go in the direction of holding people criminally liable for someone else's suicide? That is very unusual stance to take in American law. It's one that dates from the 19th century, when sometimes a woman who was a rape victim, if she died, her rapist would actually be charged with homicide. And feminists protested that idea because it seemed to take all the agency and power away from the woman who had committed suicide. Mm. And I feel like we're sort of moving in this odd way back in that direction, and I really think we should hesitate strongly before we do that.
On the other hand, if we know that there is a percentage of people who take their lives after incidents of bullying, then could we argue that the bulliers know or should have known that they were putting somebody at risk of suicide, at a heightened risk of suicide, with their actions?
Yeah, I think down the line you could start to make that argument. I'm not sure at this moment, or certainly before this death, that was generally known enough that you can really hold 18-year-olds responsible for it. I mean, one of the tricky things about this case is we're talking about kids who are, they're adults, legally speaking, but they're really just on the brink of adulthood. And, you know, this is sort of a recent phenomenon that we've become so aware of, this link, this supposed link between bullying and suicide. And so to crack down in such a heavy-handed way against particular kids, I understand the impulse to make an example of them, but I think we have to remember that they're real people, and these are, you know, enormous consequences for them individually.
Joyce in Bound Brook, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. I'm a member of the Rutgers Protestant Campus Ministry Board, and we were at the vigil last night, and we were actually doing an event at the Second Reformed Church on College Avenue, right next to the Student Union, on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. It's called For the Bible Tells Me So, and it's a film about the perversion of Scripture by evangelicals and right-wing people that preach homosexuality as a sin. We're looking at the sin of homophobia, and we're trying to take that seriously because that is a serious issue in our society.
We played the clips earlier from Dan Savage's It Gets Better video series.
I saw that when I saw the ABC News clip, and I think what Dan Savage is doing is wonderful. I think it's really important for young men, especially men seem to be more troubled by some of the issues, probably because I think the male feeling against homosexuality tends to be stronger than the female feeling. There are possibly lots of reasons for that. But what Dan Savage is doing is great. I've seen clips from It Gets Better. It's a really great way.
And reading
but I
from
think
the
underlying all of this mm-hmm. is really the religious issue and how our society has cast homosexuality in a manner of sin and degradation.
Yes, well, that's actually why I brought Dan Savage up again. He's quoted in the Times this morning quote, it says Dan Savage assigns the blame to negligent teachers and school administrators, bullying classmates, and, quote, hate groups that warp some young minds and torment others. There are accomplices
Absolutely.
Out there, he wrote on Saturday. In an interview, Mr. Savage, who is gay, said he was particularly irate at religious leaders who used anti-gay rhetoric. He said, quote, the problem is that kids are being exposed to this rhetoric, and then they go to the school, and there's this gay kid, and how are they going to treat this gay kid who they've been told is trying to destroy their family?
He's absolutely on target. There's no question but that the perversion of scripture has just created such enormous problems for a lot of young people, because then they're raised to look at homosexuality as not just another way of living, not something that someone is born into, but as somehow as a sin and something that needs to be eradicated. We need to remember that the word faggot that is often used is really refers to the sticks that were used to burn homosexuals in the Middle Ages.
Now, for people who may be listening and thinking, well, you're saying this is a distortion of scripture, but the only scripture that there is on this says homosexuality is an abomination. What would you say to the listener drawing that conclusion?
Those are old quotes from Leviticus that fall within a certain historical framework, and by the way, are also in response to what were the occult religions and the kind of polytheistic religions of the day that existed at that time. And the other issue that I would say to that is it also says that slavery is okay. I mean, slavery was okay back in, 3,000 years before the birth of Jesus. Slavery was even okay when Jesus was born.
In other words, the Bible kind of set rules that were regulations on how masters should treat their slaves.
The Bible does. There's no question that ancient Hebrew scripture did do that. But it's still condoned.
Therefore,
slavery and was used by white Southerners to support slavery before the Civil War.
Joyce, I'm going to leave it there. I appreciate your call. Amy Elsnut from the Star-Ledger, how else do you see the school itself responding to this incident? I understand that, coincidentally, the school was just beginning at the same time some kind of major, anti-bullying initiative?
Well, actually, it's called Project Civility, and it was actually just launched a few weeks ago, and it's going to be a kind of two-year ongoing conversation, talks, lectures, group meetings about the nature of respect and respecting different people and different ideas. And that obviously was just coincidental with this. The Rutgers campus, I think, historically has been known. I think it has the second oldest collegiate gay community, a formalized gay community on a campus, college campus. It's an extremely diverse place, and I think the reaction right now certainly was shock at first. And you have to understand that there were two things that these two events, the suicide and the case of the use of the webcam, came out at two different times. We learned first about the use of the webcam and the arrests and the charges, and then Tyler was missing for 8 days, and only subsequent to that was his body found and identified.
Mm-hmm.
So it's putting these things together, and of course, just like Emily said, there is no direct causal link yet. We don't know what happened in
right.
between. We don't know.
And if that, very briefly, because we're going to run out of time, if Rutgers was launching a civility campaign, did they have a particular problem of incivility that had developed on campus prior to this?
I think that there have been, a series of incidents over the years. I'm not sure if it was any one particular thing. I know they've also dealt with suicides of gay students. Just as a mental health issue. So I think it's in response to a number of things.
And Emily Bazelon from Slate, before we go, is the internet to blame? I'm a little wary of this easy conclusion that some people are jumping to. Bullies and haters will plug their ugliness into whatever means are available at the time. For example, there's also a lot of community support online for young gays and lesbians that never existed before, like Dan Savage's YouTube series, and especially for rural areas where these incidents are actually much more likely than at Rutgers, the web is a lifeline much more than, you know, almost anything in terms of the isolation of young gay youth. Today there's some kind of cyber vigil, a cyber gathering online for healing. So I don't know, do we blame the internet because now you can live stream video of somebody having sex, or where would you come down on that?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's just too simple to blame the internet, and I'm so glad that Dan Savage's It Gets Better project is getting all this attention, because it just seems to me like one of the best responses to bullying and anti-gay harassment of teenagers that I've seen. You know, I do think that there are aspects of the internet and cell phones, and we certainly saw this in this case, where kids have the capability to do something very impulsively that has totally disastrous consequences that they probably never anticipated. And you can see that here with, you know, the use of this webcam, Tyler Clementi's roommate's use of Twitter to broadcast what he was doing with the webcam. He comes off as seeming like a complete jerk, and then that comment comes to stand for sort of the whole of who he is because of the terrible consequences in this case. So I do think that the web has enormous power to do good, as you were just saying, but it also can really boomerang on teenagers.
I'm going to extend this for one more caller, because Christopher in Hoboken says he has been on Just Us Boys, the message board that you referred to a few minutes ago, where Tyler apparently seemed to be dealing with this incident without too much distress. Christopher, thanks so much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I wasn't actually involved in that thread at the time, but I have read all of his comments. And one of the things that he said was that, quote, everyone is acting like the scandal was me being with another guy. Come on now, I was spied on. So, in other words, it wasn't just the fact that it was streamed itself. It was that everyone in his dorm treated him like he'd done something wrong.
Right, I read some of those quotes from the site where he said that his roommate was the one who was getting sympathy from other dorm mates, like, ooh, you have to put up with this going on in your room.
Yeah, do you feel comfortable going back in the room after that, you know, like gay people are somehow dirty? And I also don't think he would have, that the roommate would have done that if Tyler had been in there with a girl. So I think what we're talking about is invasion of privacy as a hate crime. I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I think charging him with manslaughter is over the top. But I do think that invasion of privacy as a hate crime isn't too far to go.
Thank you for your call. And Christopher in Hoboken gets the last word. We thank Emily Bazelon from Slate, Amy Ellis Nutt from the Star Ledger, and everybody. You can continue this conversation on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up next, with Sharon Angle, Christine O'Donnell, Linda McMahon, and the power of Sarah Palin, so apparent this year, is this the year of the right-wing woman in American politics? Stay tuned.